Hello, everyone, and welcome back to A Bold New Era for Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the podcast where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I'm Patrick, and I'm here, as I have been for the past 7 years, but as you know, if you've listened to our last couple of episodes, my longtime co-hosts, Chris and Steven, have finally hung up the towel. They just got burned out of watching every horror movie on Netflix, which I can't say I blame them. They will be back on infrequent occasions for guest appearances, but today I'm here to introduce your new recurring co-hosts, and we're going to reveal them one by one. They're going to be familiar faces to you, folks you've heard on the show before, so say hello to new co-host number one, Allison with an I.
Hello.
Hello, Allison with an I. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm happy to be here.
We are happy to have you here for the next phase, and happy to also welcome your second new co-host, Allison with a Y.
Surprise, bitches.
How are you, Allison with a Y?
I'm great. I'm also very excited to be here.
Good. Well, I figured we might as well give a little introduction or reintroduction of ourselves here, since we may have listeners listening to us for the first time, and we may also have folks who might have heard your voices here and there on the podcast over the years, but don't remember exactly who you are. So let's just go one by one. I'll do this too because, you know, who knows? I've been doing this for 7 years, but this may be people's first time listening to me as well. But Allison with an I, kick us off. You know, what do you like about horror? What's your sweet spot in the genre? And more importantly, why the hell do you want to watch every horror movie on Netflix?
So I think I was kind of born with an extra horror gene. So since I was little, I would peruse my mom's book collection, which was comprised of a lot of Stephen King and Anne Rice, and we didn't have smartphones then. So that's what I read, and I loved it immediately. Like, I knew this was going to be part of my life. So from there, I wanted everything horror, anytime, all the time. So ghosts and aliens and haunted castles. Traveled to England when I was a kid and, like, wanted to see every haunted castle and hear every ghost story that every pub in the British countryside boasted. And it hasn't changed at all for me. I've been watching horror movies and reading horror novels my entire life. And I don't see it changing. I now have a 16-year-old daughter who learned to love horror all her own.
Wow. So raising them right.
Yep. Generational blessing or curse, she can decide. But yeah, it's really fun now that she's at an age where we can watch stuff together. My horror sweet spot, that's a hard one for me.
Yeah, you have like a go-to genre or a couple movies that like describe who you are and where you sit in the genre.
I often say that there are certain artists, writers, directors, musicians that I'm happy to be alive at the same time as, and Jordan Peele comes to mind every time. So I'll watch anything that he does. I haven't missed any of his movies, and I've seen them all in theater, and then they've been on rewatch for me. You know, they've become my favorite feel-bad movies, right? Just my comfort horror movies. So I would say that's what comes to mind most immediately. And why do I want to watch every horror movie on Netflix? You know what? I was already going to watch them anyway. So might as well get together with my buds and talk shit.
And you've watched a few with us before. Are there any highlights or lowlights from your past Amon experiences? Like movies that were really good or where you were just like, what the hell? Why did you do this to me?
You know, there were a few movies that we watched that I wouldn't have probably otherwise. I think Boys in the Trees, I don't think I would have watched, which was delightful and great. Totally different from what I would have usually sought out. What else have we watched? Men. I would have seen Men on my own. I don't think you were here for that.
I wasn't, but I watched the movie because I had been wanting to watch it for so long. I think I was out of town, so I couldn't join the podcast. But I was like, I need to finally watch this because I love Alex Garland, and I was fascinated by the concept, and that was so good.
It was so good, and it's something I would have watched regardless, but I was so glad to have like-minded people to talk about it with because it was just a bizarro, wonky, crazy, spooky, weirdo movie. That was a highlight for me, for sure.
Nice.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Nice. Glad to have you here. So Allison with a Y, same questions for you. You know, what's your, what brings you to horror? What interests you about horror? You know, what are your sweet spots in the genre and why the hell do you want to watch every horror movie on Netflix?
Yeah. Similar to Allison with an I, it's just kind of been in my bones since I was a kid. I wasn't aesthetically a spooky kid, but I was, in my interests, a spooky kid. I've been interested in the paranormal, supernatural, macabre for as long as I can remember. I remember being in fourth grade and trying to find every book possible in the school library about witches. And I had memorized the big witch's spell from Macbeth when I was a kid just for fun and because I had such a fascination with it. And before I got into scarier stuff, like Casper was my favorite movie because I loved ghosts and I loved haunted houses. And even as like a child, I loved going to like our local like haunted houses every Halloween. So it's always just been a fascination. And then, you know, I remember probably when I was too young, I watched Amityville Horror and it stuck with me and I was terrified and horrified, but also just fascinated. And I was fascinated with the feeling that it gave me. And I wanted more because it's like that safe sort of expression of fear that I think is like really healthy to exercise every once in a while. And now I get to exercise it more than once in a while. And I love a good spooky story. Nothing makes me happier than a good ghost story. For anybody who has heard me on the podcast before, I listen to so many spooky podcasts. It's kind of my bread and butter, so it's fun to finally officially be on one. And as for like favorite film genres, as you can imagine, like paranormal horror is definitely my favorite. I love good like gothic horror. I love the stuff that's very atmospheric, that really builds tension. That's the stuff that like makes me have to get up and like, you know, pace around to just get the anxiety out of my body. And it's a maddening feeling that I also kind of love. So yeah.
Hell yeah. I think there are going to be some longtime listeners who will be excited because folks were super into your podcast recommendations in the past. And I think that was, you know, funnily enough, I always say like I'm a podcast host, but I don't listen to podcasts. And I think the same was true for Chris, to a lesser degree, Steven. So I think folks are going to appreciate you bringing some podcast recommendations to the table in particular. But you have also reviewed several movies with us in the past. And I'm also curious if anything stands out to you, like I asked Allison with an eye. Yeah. Anything that was just like, oh, this was awful, or something maybe you wouldn't have watched otherwise that you enjoyed?
It's funny. Maybe my worst experience was the experience that I suggested in the first place, which was watching every Paranormal Activity movie. Such a slog. Oh my God, so many regrets. But I'm glad I did it, but that definitely sticks out as a low point. But I also, I don't know, there's been some great episodes. The one that comes to mind, just because like I was such an outlier in it, was when we watched Creep, because I love that movie. Mm-hmm. It's really up there for me on horror films, and nobody else liked it.
I'm with you on that one. I love that movie.
So I'll introduce myself real quick or reintroduce myself. I'm Patrick, and I have been a co-host of this podcast since 2017. You know, almost 200 episodes in. I have been a film nerd for a long time, probably since high school, and then kind of started getting more and more to horror. I would just say my love of horror has only grown as I've become an adult. I just love the transgressive kind of taboo nature of the subject matter when you get into horror. I'm a big body horror guy. I love my Cronenberg. Love my David Lynch. Love a good surreal note. But I'm also a simp for a franchise. I forced my former co-host to watch a few franchises in their entirety. So Allison's Paranormal Activity idea was not an outlier. We've done that a few different times with Nightmare on Elm Street and Final Destination. So I don't know. My interests kind of run the gamut. And I was fascinated to watch every horror movie on Netflix starting in 2017. Because, again, you just get to see so many things that you wouldn't otherwise. And a lot of the time, they're really bad. And I wish that I could forget them. But you also come upon some gems. I've come upon so many things that I never would have watched. And it just turned out to be a beautiful experience that I'm really glad I got to have. And on top of that, I love talking movies. I used to be a professional film critic. So it's nice to still tap into that part of my personality, except just sitting down with a couple of my good friends and seeing how a Netflix movie hits us. So we're going to keep doing that same thing that we've been doing for several years now, but with a new crew and a couple little tweaks. So if you've been listening to the show for a long time, you know that we usually start each episode with a little bit of horror catch-up where we talk about what we've been listening to. I don't think... Well, you might be listening to some horror, Allison.
It might sometimes be listening to.
Yeah, listening to, watching, reading, or just experiencing in real life. Sometimes we talk about the horrors of real life, which seem more numerous than ever before lately.
Yikes.
But we're going to tweak that format just a little bit because horror catch-up is always something that I think we've tried to rush through a little bit in the past because we consume so much horror, Chris, Steven, and I did, and I know that amongst the three of us, we do the same thing, but we're going to take horror catch-up out of the top of each episode and put it into a single episode a month that'll be a bit longer, where we're able to go into a little more depth on the stuff that we've been enjoying lately. So that'll be every fourth episode. You'll get it roughly monthly, and then the other three episodes a month will just be your standard movie reviews, which we are about to get into today. We went alphabetical order, so Allison with an I, you won out, and you selected Bone Tomahawk. I think I'm going to give a quick synopsis of this first, just so those who haven't seen the movie or don't know anything about it know a little bit about what we're dealing with here, and then I want to hear about why you chose this movie. So Bone Tomahawk is set in the American West in the late 1890s, and the movie starts when two ne'er-do-wells, played by Sid Haig, a horror legend, and David Arquette, also a horror legend, are attacked by mysterious, apparently indigenous people after disturbing what appears to be a burial mound. Sid Haig is killed, while David Arquette flees to the nearby town of Bright Hope, which is run by Sheriff Franklin Hunt, who's played by Kurt Russell, and his well-meaning backup deputy, Chicory, who's played by Richard Jenkins. Hunt is suspicious of David Arquette and shoots him in the leg when he tries to escape. Hunt brings in Samantha O'Dwyer, who's the daughter of the town doctor, to tend to David Arquette's wound, but she, David Arquette, and another sheriff's deputy are abducted by the attackers we saw in the opening scene. Another indigenous man in Bright Hope identifies those attackers as not Indians, but troglodytes, which we're going to get into later. Samantha's husband, Arthur, played by Patrick Wilson, has been badly injured while working on his roof, but he insists on joining Hunt, Chicory, and a well-dressed gunslinger named Bruder, played by Matthew Fox, as they set out to rescue the three kidnapped people. So that's the basic gist of what we're working with Bone Tomahawk. And Allison with an I, I know we sat down, we were kind of planning out what we were doing with the podcast, and I said, you get the first pick, and you came up with this like that. Like, it did not take you long to make your pick. So what interested you about this one?
This movie has been on my radar for some time. It was recommended to me by a couple of people, and I just hadn't gotten around to it yet. I think Westerns aren't really my thing, so it wasn't like an instant, I have to watch that tonight kind of movie. But I had heard, A, that it was really good, and B, that there was a scene. There was a scene that was horrendous in the best way. So admittedly, I was bracing myself the whole movie for that scene, which we'll talk about later in the spoiler room. But I mean, this movie has been like, you have to see it. You know, I've looked at the I've googled it a number of times. It's got a great Rotten Tomatoes score, so I knew it wasn't just, you know, a niche kind of cult thing. And it was universally liked. And I'm so glad. So when I opened up the Netflix app when we were deciding on the movie, and there it was. It was like, no brainer. This is what's next for us. So,
perfect.
Yeah.
What's funny about the scene that you mentioned that we'll talk about later. So I had seen this previously, and Allison with a Y and I were talking about it, and they were like, this is supposed to be really brutal, isn't it? And I was like, that is its reputation, but I couldn't remember what the scene was or what the brutal violence was. So I was sort of like, I guess, shocked by it all over again when it happened this time.
Yeah, it was shocking for sure.
Yeah. So this movie is written and directed by S. Craig Zahler, who's kind of a weird and notable figure. Have either of you heard of or seen any of his other movies? He's known for Brawl in Cell Block 99 and Dragged Across Concrete are his two other movies.
I have not.
Yeah.
Same. I've never seen any of his other stuff.
Okay. Yeah. So I've seen both, and he came across my radar a few years ago when Bone Tomahawk came out, and it was like, oh, this is a guy who's making like pulpy, like old school kind of genre movies that are just sort of nasty and weird and low budget. So he's been a fascinating figure to me for a long time. He was a novelist for a long time. He was like a Western writer and then ended up making this movie as his first film. I mean, he has kind of a weird background. Like, there's some strange kind of political stuff in this movie that I think we'll get into. He's been accused of being a conservative filmmaker. He's been accused of making movies for the MAGA crowd was a headline that went around about him at one point. Yeah. I find him fascinating personally, and even like just very inspiring. I read an interview with him one time. He did a comic book, which inspired me to do a comic book. And he just said, I know I'm not good at art. I just wanted to make a comic book and see how it turned out. And frankly, that was so inspiring to me. So he's like a big sort of an inspiration to me personally, but also still a weird person for me to sort out his political shit.
Hmm.
Especially because he's connected to like a whole controversy around a movie production company down in Texas that went under because of accusations of sexual misconduct. They were also running Fangoria. If anybody reads Fangoria, I know we have some Fangoria readers out there. And so you're probably already familiar with that controversy, but it's just a kind of a weird dude at the head of this whole thing.
It's funny. You said he's been accused of making movies for MAGA. Mm-hmm. And now I'm looking back like retroactively and thinking about if that felt resonant. Did it for you, Allison?
Yes, for me, it did.
I can kind of see it now.
Yeah, there were things about the film that made me uncomfortable, not in a, oh, this is interesting horror way, but like, oh, I don't think that this is okay kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely the biggest thing for me is the portrayal of Indigenous people in it. Using the term troglodyte, first and foremost, to try to separate them and dehumanize them was really just like viscerally upsetting to me. I get what they were trying to do, but I'm like, yo, this was made in what, 2015? Like, why are we still portraying Indigenous people in this way? You know, I was actually kind of on that subject a little bit, like the one Indigenous man who shows up, who's like in a suit, who's, you know, conversing with the people. He's an actor who I love. Yeah. Zahn McLaren. Mm-hmm. Of Res Dogs and of Big. Dark Winds. Like, I love him. I think he was also in a season of Fargo.
Yeah.
And he's
great.
I love him so much. I was so excited to see him. And then like, he didn't really do much.
Yeah. He comes on literally to like,
he's like the token Indigenous guy.
He's the quote good Indian.
Right. He like explains the distinction that these like Indians aren't really Indians, basically.
Yeah. And it was, I don't know. I didn't like it. I didn't like that. I think that there's maybe more creative things that you can do to bring supernatural horror into the Western genre. So that was like a kind of a barrier for me with this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I feel like we should sort of describe a little more about these troglodytes, as they're called in the movie. They have a very distinct kind of visual look. They're always covered in some sort of white powder or something.
Mud.
We rarely really get a good look at one. They're in loincloths. They have some sort of, a bone, I think, has been inserted into their windpipe, I guess. I don't mm-hmm. know the biology of all this too much.
Trachea,
that's right. But the only sound you ever really hear them make is this, like, really eerie, kind of unholy wailing sound.
Howling.
That they make by forcing air through this, like, bone embedded in their tracheas. So they never speak.
Yeah.
And overall, the impression is, like, aliens, monsters,
yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
not people.
Right. Yeah, that's the impression I got. And, you know, I'm trying to find a way to have felt offended as you did, because I think Allison with a Y and I share a lot of the same political beliefs and mm-hmm. stances on things, but I didn't feel that way. Mm-hmm. I think I got like much more of a supernatural vibe from them, like almost like predator vibe mm-hmm. in the jungle. Like, I think the fact that they couldn't speak and they had this like unhuman howl, it felt very much like aliens to me. Mm-hmm. So I guess in that way, I was able to separate, you know, the politics out of it and just feel the horror of it all.
Yeah. Mm. Well, yeah. And there, I don't know. It's so weird. It exists in such a strange gray area because the film does make this effort to distinguish them from mm-hmm. like they bring in an indigenous guy to say, these ain't my people. These mm-hmm. are some other weirdos, you know, but at the same time, like, they are clearly intended to be indigenous people. I don't know. It just exists right in this weird gray area where you can kind of interpret it either way. And, you know, I mean, I think one of my biggest questions about this is, does the movie have a political point of view? Like, is it actually trying to say something? What is it trying to say about the American West or about the Western genre? I don't know.
Yeah, there. You know, I'm thinking back, and there were a couple of points where, you know, the gunslinger shoots somebody coming up to camp, and I think that they referred to them as Mexicans, which yeah. that was an irky moment mm-hmm. for sure. I guess I didn't really walk away feeling like it was politically angled in any way, mm-hmm. but I think I really wanted to like it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe I looked past some of those things in the name of wanting to see what the hoopla was about this movie from people that are more like-minded to me than not.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, it's like a pot-stirry kind of movie, you know. I think Zoller is most interested in kind of creating a little bit of a volatile little mix of political elements, because so I mean, you referenced the scene, Allison with an I, about the Mexican the couple of Mexican guys who try to enter our main quartet's campsite as they're on their way to rescue the people who've been kidnapped. And this guy Bruder, played by Matthew Fox, is just cold-blooded son of a bitch. Like, he's the worst of the four.
Yeah.
The four people who go on this rescue mission. And he's just like, shoot anything that moves. He puts up a tripwire around their camp and says, anything that crosses this line, doesn't matter if it's an animal or whatever, I'm killing it. And so he shoots these two Mexican guys, and Richard Jenkins's character calls him out for his bigotry on that occasion and on others. And Richard Jenkins is not supposed to, he didn't to me read as like a joke. It wasn't like, oh, this is the dumb woke character.
He was so much heart of the film.
Yeah.
To me, he really like grounded a lot of like the empathy and the compassion in the film. I loved his character.
Yeah, mm-hmm. same. Yeah, he didn't come across as like a simple-minded person.
Right.
He just had, like Allison with a Y said, a lot more heart. And I think then after he was criticizing Matthew Fox's character, he said, but they're wearing crosses, which mm-hmm. was funny and interesting. It was like, well, that's something redeeming about them, which mm-hmm. is like, well, they're human beings, you know, it right. shouldn't matter. But I thought that was one of the few kind of religious things that we got.
Yeah.
There was some religious mm-hmm. tonage there for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Throughout the movie.
Moments like that in this movie are interesting to me because it just demonstrates that Zoller's not making like a, I don't know, you know, like the Western equivalent of like that fucking Reagan biopic that was out a few months ago. Like, this is not, it's not like a right-wing screed. He may have right-wing mm-hmm. politics. He doesn't, to my knowledge, has not really discussed them in interviews. He doesn't really want to go there. I think he's more interested in just kind of playing with a genre he loves, which is the American West, and writing really interesting characters, which I think he absolutely succeeds at, you know? But there is that thorny fucking issue of, yeah, what do you do with these, like, just sort of caricatures of indigenous folks who are running around, like, wailing and eating people, you know?
Right, the cannibalism.
Yeah. Right, yeah, and we didn't even talk about that yet, but yeah, that is the big thing, is they're eating people.
Yeah, to me there just wasn't enough to kind of, like, truly separate them as different from, is trying to be truly portrayed as, like, a different type of being than like an Indigenous person.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. It was just like, oh, they're just extra primitive is what it kind of felt like they were doing with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like totally barbaric.
Yeah.
And unevolved, yeah.
And it's just like a thing, like I just happened to feel extra passionate about like the portrayal of Indigenous people in media. It's something I just have happened to have had a fascination with over the years. So it's just like, it was a little sticky point for me.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like the first two acts of this movie were really kind of slow.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a lot of, I guess character development, but they felt really slow. Like I was like, what is the big deal about this movie? Mm-hmm. Because then in act three, everything went to shit real mm-hmm. fast and mm-hmm. got real action
yeah.
horror real fast. But yeah, I think it was a lot of how different men deal with different stressful situation based on their almost archetypes.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Break those down.
Yeah. So, Patrick Wilson's character fell off of his roof, and his wife, you know, there's a scene early in the film where his wife, such a babe, by the way, what yeah. a babe, was talking about, you know, he was kind of hemming and hawing around the house and upset with the time that he had to spend, you know, not doing, right? Mm-hmm. Which right there is just typical, like, patriarchal, have to be doing something, have to be providing, have to be building.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of looked at him and said, like, this is the most time that I've had with you since in a really long time. Like, can that be enough? Which mm-hmm. I like loved that she was making that bid for connection
mm-hmm.
and like reframing it for him. Like, hi, I'm here too. I'm your hot wife and we have a lot of time together. So like a scene or two later, they're like jumping each other's bones, which was amazing. It's like, mm-hmm. this is what you should be doing, you know, while she's like catering to his tibia.
mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and also interesting, as a quick side note just about that scene, I love that she's riding him at the beginning of the sex scene, then he's like, turn over, let's do this the right way. And then yeah. they just do like missionary with him on yeah. top, and I think that said a lot about his character.
Yeah, totally. But, you know, he was just the husband that needed to provide, right? Mm-hmm. So there's totally one archetype. Kurt Russell, the quintessential sheriff in town, who's... he was great, actually. I really
loved him.
Yeah, I loved his character. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a total type there.
Right, because it's like the classic tough guy sheriff archetype, but also extremely fallible.
Extremely fallible and a man who is not unwilling to show, like, a certain level of softness mm-hmm. and vulnerability and care
mm-hmm.
for people. It's kind of like that, like, soft heart, strong back. Mm. Sort of mm-hmm. Character that I think makes some of like the best male characters and films, and I frankly don't think we get enough of.
Yeah,
you know, because
yeah.
they are strong, they are tough, but like they know that part of that and part of being somebody who protects people is also just like showing your softness and having those tender moments, and you get some of those tender moments with him, and it creates such a rich character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that part was written really well, I think. And then we have Chicory, right? Who mm-hmm. was the deputy.
Mm-hmm. Chicory.
God, we love him. We talked about him a little bit already.
The backup deputy.
The backup, right? The assistant to the regional manager.
Yeah, exactly.
Chicory was another soft, sweet angel who, you know, we saw him visiting his wife's grave kind of a couple of times. Or he talked a lot about his dead wife and he really missed her. That got me.
Yeah.
Same. Yeah. Yeah, and you have Matthew Fox kind of hybridizing like the archetype of like the dandy.
He is a little bit dandyish.
With the gunslinger.
Yeah.
Because he's always wearing white. He's always dressed to the nines. He's cocky as fuck. He's trigger happy.
Yeah, it's that gentleman outlaw sort of archetype. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I can do this. It's okay because I act respectably mm-hmm. most of the time. Like, I'm a real gentleman, so I can do whatever I want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He had a huge ego problem, though. He couldn't miss an opportunity to say that he had slept with more women, smarter than everyone else.
Yeah.
And, you know.
He's the shittiest character.
He was the shittiest, yeah. for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. But played very well.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't really seen Matthew Fox in much outside of Lost, so it was kind of nice to see him do something different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the women in this movie were equally as amazing mm-hmm. and powerful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think we even mentioned Patrick Wilson's wife. She was the doctor. She was the town doctor,
mm-hmm.
which was so cool to have, you know, like this woman doctor. I assumed that when they were like, fetch the doctor, they meant Patrick Wilson.
Same.
Nope.
Well, she
was his wife.
She was the daughter of the doctor, I think, right? Because I think the doctor was indisposed one way or another, and so that's why she wound up serving as the doctor.
You know, I didn't get that until I read your synopsis.
Yeah.
That she was the daughter of the doctor, because I think that was sort of it was meant to be a surprising point when they went to get the doctor and you thought it was him and it was her.
Mm. Yeah.
But I guess it would make sense that she would have picked up a lot.
Yeah.
Or she would be like the proxy.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, she's highly competent on her own. That's very clear.
And Arthur O'Dwyer, Patrick Wilson's character, he says, like, the doctor kit is hers. Like, he mentions throughout, like, that's her kit.
Yeah.
Like, very specifically.
Yeah.
He wanted to make sure they got her kit back.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, it's interesting as we discuss these archetypes, kind of to go back to what we were talking about before as far as what this movie has to say about the American West or about the Western genre. All these archetypes are a little off, you know? They're not quite what you would expect. And I think if this movie has a political point, the line that stuck with me was towards the end, we'll get into the specific context for this, but when Samantha basically calls them all idiots and says this entire situation is because a series of men made a series of dumb, rash decisions. And obviously there are different viewpoints in this movie that aren't like a mouthpiece for Zoller as the writer or director. But that was the closest I came to being like, this feels like his thesis statement where he's just saying, yep, this is the fruits of multiple men doing dumb shit, and now everybody's fucked because of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, you know, tweaking the sheriff archetype to show that, yeah, he's a tough sheriff, but also he dies like anybody else, you know? None of these characters are superpowered. And when it comes down to the violence, it's quick and brutal and over real fast. Mm-hmm. It's very realistic, honestly, anytime violence happens in this movie, and no character is immune to it.
Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was one of the moments that sort of offset any sort of conservative spin that I thought might be on the movie, that one quote. And then just the portrayal of these wives as is equally important characters that helped round out these men, right? Mm-hmm. They made these men more than just the two-dimensional beings that they were. They were made richer by the women in their lives.
Yeah.
And there's no shortage of them giving a nod and like appreciation to these women. You know, they come up a lot. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I did like that. It felt like it offset any sort of misogynistic tone that there might be. And I appreciated that the director put that kind of spin on it. And
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
as like a strong female person, I like to consider myself that. I was appreciative that he didn't make them into tropes, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and when you mentioned Allison with an Eye earlier, kind of the slow pace of the first two acts of this, I did read an interview with him where he was saying just how important it is to him, to Zoller, the writer-director, saying it's important to him to allow time to just sit with the characters and see how they interact with each other. And I he used the word love. I think he described it almost as, I think, like an act of love towards the characters to spend that time just seeing how they behave in everyday scenarios. And I appreciated that a lot in this movie because these characters do seem so distinct and I felt attached to them in different ways
as
a result of that. By the time it finally gets to this, frankly, kind of batshit climax.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it felt like if it was any longer with the character development, it would have been a little too long, but it felt just right for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was getting to the point where I was like, okay, let's go.
Yeah.
Got it. Love them. Feel differently about all of them. It's complicated. Amazing. Yeah. Let's go. Mm-hmm. And then it was time. So I really liked the pacing. I didn't think I would until act three. And then I was like, okay, that was perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I really love the character buildup, the character development in it. It was the perfect amount to get you emotionally invested in these characters so that, you know, the various kinds of payoffs towards the end really hit hard, whether they're like low or high.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed that.
So we're on every horror movie on Netflix, and this movie showed up. Allison and I picked it because it was in the horror category. And I'm curious for your thoughts. Is this movie horror? You know, did it strike you as horror?
Not overtly. Mm-hmm. And like I said, not until the very end. Mm-hmm. I can now see why it would be put in a horror category. I don't know another category it would fit better in, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yes and no. Yes, ultimately, no, not for most of it.
Yeah, I asked because it's been this sort of perennial question for us. Because obviously Netflix will, I think their theory is to get things into multiple categories. And so it's like, yeah, it's a Western and it's horror. But we've run up on some movies over the course of doing this podcast where it's like, this is a children's movie. And I mean, that's a literal case. Like, we watched Boothnoth and it was like, there's nothing horror about this. There's a ghost, but it's like the friendliest ghost imaginable. Allison with a Y, I need to get used to sticking the letters in every time I say one of your names. Did it strike you as horror? Did you feel horror watching this?
I definitely felt horror watching it. Mm-hmm. So I see why. I think it's like a slow burn to get to the horror. I mean, they introduced the horror right away, in all fairness. And I certainly see the justification for it. And I think when you, I think some type of, you know, gritty Westerns can kind of make their way over to the horror genre. And I think as a Western, I think it justified its space mm-hmm. in the horror genre. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, and certainly that final sequence that we'll discuss more in the spoiler room is, especially when you couch these, the antagonists in this scene as troglodytes, and we've talked about how they come off as just monsters. It's like, yeah, it's a zombie cannibal fight, basically, at the end. And it is gruesome. But I think if you're browsing through the horror section on Netflix and you're like, huh, a horror Western, you're going to watch an hour and a half of this movie going, what the fuck?
You know? Yeah.
Where's my horror?
Yeah.
But you'll get it by the end. So if you are sitting in front of your Netflix queue and wondering if you should give this a shot, we are now going to review the movie. Again, since this episode may be a jumping on point for new listeners, I'll explain real quickly how we do things. We rate every movie on a view it, cue it, or screw it scale, and I think that's pretty self-explanatory. View it, high recommendation. Cue it, it could sit in your queue for a while. You know what happens to the Netflix queue. You put a movie in there, you put 1,000 movies in there, and when do you actually watch them? But it's like, there might be the right moment for this at some time. And screw it is just, don't waste your time. So we're going to do that right now for Bone Tomahawk. Allison, with an I, you picked this movie, so I'm going to go to you first. View it, cue it, or screw it.
I think it's a cue it for me. It was, again, I'm not a big Western person. I think I really liked the idea of watching the movie to talk about on the podcast. But if it weren't for that, it probably would have sat in my queue, like you said, for a little bit longer, slash until it was no longer on Netflix. And then I might have panicked, watched it if it was like leaving soon. Mm-hmm. not my favorite, but I really did appreciate that I had a reason to watch it. Mm-hmm. I appreciated, like we said, the writing, the acting, the character development, and then the action at the end was truly terrifying. Mm-hmm. So it did what it needed to do for me, but it wasn't like I'm going to stop, you know, do a catch up with my closest friend, horror friends, and tell them they have to watch this. Mm-hmm. Allison with a Y, you're next.
I think I'm similar in that it's a cue. It is an extremely competently made film. It is objectively good. It's just, I don't know if I can recommend it. It doesn't fit exclusively in Western because it's going to throw in some things that people who love Westerns aren't necessarily going to be down with. It doesn't fall exclusively into horror because there's a lot of, you know, non-horror elements in it. So it's so niche, and I think it is very well done, but because of that, it like puts it in sort of a weird spot where it's like, if this sounds interesting, go for it, but I'm not necessarily going to tell my friends, oh, you need to watch this movie.
Yeah, same.
I would go view it on this one. I've watched it once before, and I actually liked it better than I remembered liking it the first time. Obviously, there's a weird kind of gray area between horror and Western that we've discussed here. But if you've made it this far and heard this much about the movie, and you know that the real horror doesn't kick in until the final half hour or something, go for it. I think it's an extremely well-made, very, very competently made, especially for a first-time director working with, you know, Kurt Russell and Richard Jenkins and actors of pretty incredible stature. I think Zoller kind of nailed it. At the very least, you'll have some interesting discussions with anybody who you watch the movie with, because as we've talked about in the past half hour or whatever it's been, there's some interesting political shit to unpack here. And your mileage may vary on that, but I think it's thrilling. It's hard not to get attached to these characters, you know? Yeah. I found myself just so surprisingly attached to them by the end of this, and I think it's worth it for that alone, because over 190 movies of watching every horror movie on Netflix, there's a lot of movies where I did not give one fuck about any character in the movie. So good on it for that at the very least. So the next thing we're going to do here is go down to the spoiler room, which is where we discuss all the spoilers, things you wouldn't want to know if you want to go into this movie and just have that pure experience of being surprised by the big plot twists. So we'll discuss that next. But before we go there, I'm going to encourage you to check out our website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com. We have a merch store on there with a bit of podcast art that I designed. That you can get on a t-shirt or coffee cup or other things like that on the lovely website, tpublic.com. I'll also encourage you to go to your podcast provider of choice, follow the show, and please leave us a review. It helps folks find the show, and we love to see the feedback, especially as we go into a new era of the podcast. And we also would love to encourage you to go to our social media and follow us there. And there are some big changes coming to our social. Actually, one of them already happened. We're no longer on Nazi-owned X. But I'm going to turn it over to our new, should we call you the social media manager, Allison with a Y? I feel like that's been foisted upon you.
I guess so. I mean, I volunteered for the position. Yeah, so instead of Nazi-owned X, we're on Libutopia Blue Sky. At Amoncast. We're still on Facebook as far as I know.
Yep.
And Instagram. Blue Sky all at Amoncast. And then, you know, who knows how long TikTok will be around for, but for the time being, there will be a TikTok page for Amon Podcast. For some reason, I couldn't have Amoncast. But
we're going to kill whoever that was.
Yeah, I'm going to find them. I'm going to find them and bone tomahawk them. that is for entertainment purposes only.
as they say on TikTok.
So we'll start posting there. You'll see some of our faces, probably more of my face than anyone ever wants to see. But yeah, you can check that out. And if some other, you know, plucky little social media app comes along, we might check that out as well, and we'll keep you informed.
Wonderful. It's EHMONcast, and that's just the initials of the show, Every Horror Movie on Netflix. All right, so now that we've given you your marching orders for social media and whatnot, we are going to head down to the spoiler room and spoil everything about what happens in the action-packed final half hour or so of Bone Tomahawk. So they've thrown a rope down. They're hoisting us up to the spoiler cave. Are you guys ready to go? I don't know if we have a choice.
I think we have to go to the spoiler cave.
I'm ready.
Going to the spoiler cave. All right. We'll see you in just a minute. All right. We are back. The troglodytes have hauled us up to the spoiler cave, and we are going to reveal everything that happens in the climax of Bone Tomahawk. One of the most interesting, I guess, kind of bits of context for this finale to me was whatever the hell happens or doesn't happen to Patrick Wilson's leg.
Yeah, that was confusing.
So this leg, I mean, frankly, this is the greatest horror of the first hour and a half, is him just dragging around. His leg is clearly fucked, but he's, you know, just dogged that he's going to go rescue his wife. And you, fuck you, Sheriff. Fuck you, whoever says I need to be on this rescue mission. Otherwise, I can't sleep. I can't live without my wife, whatever. And he gets into a scuffle, I think, with Matthew Fox and fucks his leg up even more in the process. And it's heavily, not even suggested, it seemed clear to me that they were going to, that they needed to amputate his leg.
Yeah, like he was going to lose the leg.
They pull out like a cleaver and they leave him having performed some procedure that I guess we don't really see. And we don't see him for a while, but then he arrives to the finale with the leg intact. Did either of you, I have no idea what happened there. Do either of you have perspective on what happened?
I think at some point, because he was like, you can't take the leg. He's like, I just need you to set it. Mm-hmm. And it still very much seemed like they were going to take the leg. It was kind of like, we don't have a choice.
Yeah.
And they brought out that massive knife. Mm-hmm. It seems like Chikaru is going to perform the amputation. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's the only thing that I can think of that, you know, maybe for some reason he convinced them to just set it. But
yeah, his tibia.
Yes.
Back to the tibia. It seemed like he had broken it, right? Like it was, yeah. Like, was it like a compound fracture? Was it through?
I think we saw some of it, like a little bit come out of his leg.
We did.
There's certainly a crunch when he makes that lunge at, ugh, I think it's Bruder, which was, I mean, again, we see horrifying explicit violence in this movie eventually, but hearing that crack with no visual as he lunged at him and then Patrick Wilson's acting reaction of just screaming in pain was, you know, I like clenched up my entire body as much as anything in this movie when that happened.
Yeah, same. And that was definitely one of the choices that Arthur's wife later makes while they're in the cave of the, you men are just stupid. You're idiots, right?
Yeah.
Like that was the argument that they got in was over nothing. Yep. It was like Bruder had said something about Arthur's wife that was, you could have let that one go. Mm-hmm. And they were so freaking close to the cave. It's like right here, you had to rehurt yourself right here. You've come this far. Mm-hmm. It was heartbreaking, you know, because no one wanted that more than him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it ended up working out somehow.
Somehow.
Yeah. So the sheriff, Chicory, and Bruder, the gunmen, reach the cave without Patrick Wilson. It's been a long-standing tradition on this show that we sometimes refer to people by character names and also sometimes just call them the actor name, and I'm not going to change that now.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
So Kurt Russell and Chicory and Matthew Fox get to the cave.
Make of that what you will.
Yeah. And the shit starts, you know, the bullets just start flying and it's horrifying. Like, again, it feels very real because and I'm just going to call them troglodytes because that's the term used in the film, but the troglodytes pop out of nowhere and just take their shot and it's over in a minute, you know, destabilizing wounds and deaths and all kinds of stuff happens really fast. It feels mm-hmm. like being in a war zone or something. It feels very realistic. In a really scary way.
Yeah, the arrow that Bruder got to his wrist mm-hmm. was just brutal. You know, I mean, the blood, it was like an artery, presumably. And
he loses his hand. He loses, right?
Yeah, he gets his hand chopped off.
Did his mm-hmm. hand come all the way off?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was
It was a fatal wound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He had a little heroic moment there, though, you know, sort of a redemption arc.
Yeah, I mean, it was a 10-second redemption. Leave me with a bunch of dynamite.
Yeah.
And I'll blow up as many as I can.
And a cigar.
Yeah.
Right.
But he never does.
No, he gets one more, but as he shoots that person, they throw a bone tomahawk at his head, and that's it for Bruder.
Mm-hmm. Right, and the bone tomahawk of the title is I think, a jawbone of some animal,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
Scary-ass weapon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Used several times in this climax.
Horrifying looking.
Yeah, so he dies right outside of the cave.
Right.
Yep.
Which is another interesting kind of tweak on what you would expect of a Western, because he sets up this heroic sacrificial death for himself that does not pan out.
Right. You know,
there are not really any big traditional hero moments in this. It's just blood and carnage and people who are horrendously ill-prepared for the situation that they're walking into, getting essentially what they deserve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More or less.
Yeah. So Kurt Russell and Chicory leave Matthew Fox behind. They get hauled up to the cave and imprisoned in a very primitive cell that's been created across from Samantha, Arthur's wife's cell. Very soon after they get there, a character who I think we've pretty much all forgotten at this point, Or at least I had. I was like, who the hell is this? He shows up for like 2 seconds at the beginning.
I only thought anything of him because I saw him in the show Frontier that also had Jason Momoa, like back in like 2016, 2018 era. And he was great in that. So I was like, oh, hey, that guy again.
I had no attachment to him whatsoever. I just knew there was one other person that was with her.
And what happens to
two. There were two other people with her.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
David Arquette.
Yeah. But I think we already saw him. Dead when they get there.
Yeah.
I already forgot.
She says that they killed him and ate him.
Yeah. Right. And that was the first we had heard of the cannibalism.
Yeah.
And then they pull out this other character who I had forgotten. And so again, I've been doing this for a while. I described this basically the exact same kill when we reviewed Terrifier, so I'll let someone else explain what happens to this character, because it is the moment that Allison with an I referenced at the beginning of this movie.
I have an admission to make. I did not watch it. I covered my eyes because I knew that I cannot. There are certain things that I had heard about it before, and I was like, oh, this is the moment. I'm not going to watch this because then I will never get it out of my head, and I don't need that in there.
Allison with a Y.
Yep.
Well, I guess I'll describe it.
Yeah.
So this guy is taken out of his cell that he's sharing with Samantha, I believe, or maybe just a cell next to her. And this is like totally a show of strength from the Tragdalites. Are like, now that you're all here, we're going to show you what lies ahead for you if you fuck around. Mm-hmm. And they take him out of his cell, and he's mostly, I guess he was naked, wasn't he?
Yeah.
They take his clothes off, cut his clothes off. First, they scalp him, which was extremely graphic. Mm-hmm. I mean, these scenes felt so close to what it would really look and feel like if this were to happen. Like, that was by far the most jarring part. I mean, this scene was insane. They scalp him and then they stuff his scalp in his mouth.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Which was just like, he didn't need to do all that. The scalping alone was a lot, you know, and even for someone who has a pretty high tolerance for gore, that was an extra icky moment. And directly after that, they flip him upside down and use their bone tomahawk to cut him from his
balls to his neck
clean in half, straight in half. And it was terrible to watch. I won't mince words about it. It was terrible. It was horrifying. That was one of the more viscerally scary gore scenes I think I've ever seen in a movie. So, and it was what I was expecting. I wasn't expecting that, but it was what I thought might happen to the utmost degree.
Well, and it was funny because, you know, it's come up on the show many times before, but I have a shitty memory. Not good. I did not remember that happening. I had seen this movie before, and you would think that would be the one thing, like, just frozen in my mind, watching this dude get cut in half upside down. I literally said out loud to Allison with why we were watching it together, and I was like, you think I'd have remembered that?
Yeah.
But no.
It's funny that was your takeaway, is I'll never forget this if I watch it.
And yeah.
You were like, totally didn't remember that.
I was like, I forget everything.
I mean, I have a terrible memory too, so I'm with you on that one.
But. I had been told years ago what happened. And so I was like, I kind of knew going in. I was like, I don't think I can actually watch that. I will just like cover my eyes, because that's, even you just describing it, Allison with an I, was so hard for me to hear. My body was having like a physical reaction to hearing that description.
It was graphic. I was so glad that nothing terrible that we saw happened to Samantha. You know, there was no sign that she had been raped. Which surprised me. Like, I thought she'd be in a lot worse shape when we saw her, and I was really glad that they hadn't gotten to her yet, thankfully, because that would have been maybe a bridge too far for me.
There is the weird, I mean, this is, to me, this was just purely unnecessary. We find out that the entire tribe, most of the tribe of troglodytes is men, and they have two pregnant women who are blinded and hobbled, just like there to breed, basically. And we see them at the end of this whole climax sequence, and it was just like, you know, again, like I basically made potentially some excuses for Zoller and his politics in the first half of this, but it's just like, why?
Yeah,
do that we felt need that? So unnecessary. And yeah. also, like, and I, like, I guess I get it, but also I was like, why aren't these characters trying to save these women who, like,
yeah. I know they ran right by
really
them.
Upsetting.
Yeah. I guess I get it. I mean, if I had just seen that unfold and know that I that could be my fate, I'd probably be hightailing it out of there too. But
yeah.
it did feel like an extra just kick in the stomach, you
right.
know, for the viewer. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a strange note. But anyways, this horrifying act of violence is committed against this character. Kurt Russell and Richard Jenkins try to poison some of the troglodytes with opium, which is moderately successful. They take out, I think,
one
and a half, basically. Yeah.
But they weren't well resourced, so they did what they could, you know? Yeah. Like, I appreciated, I don't know that if I were in that position, not that I, holy shit, hope to never be, but they used whatever they had, which was nothing, you know? So one and a half was better than, and they were down to like single digit troglodytes left, right? Like there were nine or
I think so,
something.
Yeah.
Because
they started with 12, I believe.
Yeah.
And I mean, we were, me as a viewer, I was counting every single one. Like, okay, because one of these can do a lot of damage. And,
right.
And you know, at that point, the deputy was hurt. Kurt Russell was not at that point. Or Samantha, I mean, she's only resourced so much. That's it. So I think every kill mattered, but go on.
Yeah, so our sort of deus ex machina in this whole situation is Patrick Wilson, whose leg was, in fact, not amputated. And he, probably his smartest move is he cuts the bone thingy out of the trachea of one of the troglodytes and starts sticking this gross, bloody, gristly thing in his mouth to make the whistly, howly call that they make to each other. So he starts summoning troglodytes and then taking them out. Ambushing them, and he comes to the rescue of Chicory and Hunt and Samantha. Kurt Russell gets fucked up in this melee and decides to stay behind. He says he's going to take out as many troglodytes as he can while the other ones escape.
Yeah, the flask that had the opium in it that they used to poison the troglodytes. One of the last most brutal acts of violence is they cut Kurt Russell's character open and stick the flask that has been sitting in a burning fire and burning embers inside of his body. But the idea that the troglodyte grabbed his gun and couldn't figure out that he had to reload. It's like there was a couple of little cool attention to detail things that but truly bought them seconds.
Yeah.
And there was that tension, you know.
So tense.
It was so tense. Like they need every second they can get.
Yeah.
I don't think I breathed for like, I mean, I was holding my breath for like the last.
Watching him figure out how to reload the gun.
Just the whole, I mean, you're like, damn it. But that was just enough time for Arthur to hobble in there and work his magic somehow.
Yeah.
Which I didn't see happening. I thought it was, I didn't think there was going to be any sort of happy ending there.
Yeah.
I thought
it
was game over for everybody.
Yeah.
I was pretty convinced too. I think like during that whole sequence at one point I got up and I had to like do my pacing around because it was just so stressful. It was so tense and like, you're like, there's no hope for anyone at this point.
And had the movie ended that way, I think it would have felt a little too bleak for me. Like we needed a little bit of a happy ending. I mean, there wasn't anything happy about it, especially them running past those pregnant women, which, like we said, a kick in the teeth. But but they persisted.
And for me, the happiest part of the ending was Chicory makes it.
I know.
Chicory makes it out. I was convinced from the beginning that he was going to die. They're like, they were setting it up that his wife was dead. So it's kind of like, well, you know, and he was like a little bit dopey and maybe a little too soft. And I thought they were really setting it up for him to die. And I was going to be so mad if he did. So when he made it out, I was like, oh, thank God. He's the only person. I mean, Samantha, I really wanted her to survive too. But those two, I was like, please, like a wish and a prayer.
And that line that he says, Kurt Russell's character, when he's dying, he says, say goodbye to my wife and I'll say hello to yours. I was like, God damn it.
Took me out.
Seriously.
Good stuff.
Yeah,
good stuff.
It was good stuff.
And again, like you care about that because Zoller invested the time and the love to set up those relationships. It works like gangbusters. And Arthur, Samantha, and Chicory get away. And they hear the gunshots of
three
Kurt
times,
Russell,
right?
Taking out, I think, the rest of the
troglodytes.
The last three, in the distance. And I think it's Arthur who has been carrying a rock, or maybe Chicory is carrying a rock and sets it down. And that's the end of the movie because he doesn't feel the need to defend himself any further.
I kind of wish I changed mine to a view it.
I mean, you can,
it was great. It
I
was,
think you can do it retroactively. Steven's done that at least a few times.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, it's fine. I mean, I stand by what I said, but it was, I mean, I liked it at the end. It was,
yeah,
it was like, holy shit, that was a lot.
Mm-hmm. It had a good payoff.
It did.
And the violence, because, you know, we've talked about the violence. I think the violence in this movie is so interesting because there is that one moment that we've talked about that you're going to remember and is, well, maybe
unless
not,
you're Patrick.
Unless you're me, yeah. that is legitimately horrifying. And so it is graphic in like the true description of that. You see everything. You see more than you want to. But there's also so much violence in this that is almost mundane at times, the way someone will just get shot. And I guess by the rules of movie violence, sometimes I'm like, oh, that's just like a gunshot. They'll get back up. But no, it's a fucking gunshot and they're dead, you know? The juxtaposition of like just that grueling scene of the guy being sliced in half with the super quick and very realistic moments where just, someone's dead. Or like, or sticking the flask in Kurt Russell. I mean, I guess it is graphic, but it could be so much more graphic than it is. You feel it because of his performance, I think, almost more than anything. It's almost virtuosic, really. Like the command that Zoller shows, especially in a like a first time director's film, of depicting violence in different ways, and you just feel it intensely, really, no matter who it is. I felt it with any troglodyte who got killed too. It's like, oh fuck, like they're done.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I wish I had kind of known that this was his directorial debut before today, because I didn't know that. And it makes me so much more impressed. I was already impressed, but so much more. Yeah. And potentially more popular than the other two films he did. Is that accurate or fair
I
to
think
say?
So, yeah. I mean, the other two are both very good too. Brawl is good. And Dragged Across Concrete is incredible, actually. That got very caught up in politics because it's about a cop played by Mel Gibson.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yikes. So that's a way to like...
Big yikes.
Bad start.
That's a way to make a lot of people go, yeah, I don't like this movie and I don't need to see it right off the jump. But actually, I think that's the best of his movies, and it's really fucking well done. I would love to discuss that with you too as well, but it's not on Netflix, nor is it really horror.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not horror, you said?
Mm-mm.
It's more of like action.
Crime, thriller.
I feel like the two movies that he did apart from this are going to be on my next.
It's going to be on a list somewhere. I would recommend them both. Yeah, they're both really well done. I would love to talk to you about them if you do.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I feel like that pretty much covers Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah, I think
Any other thoughts?
I don't think so.
Well, as we do at the end of every episode, we find out what we're watching next. And the cycle we go through, again, for a little refresher for those who may be new to the podcast, is our three co-hosts here are going to take turns and we'll go in alphabetical order. So Allison with an I picked our first movie of this new era. Allison with a Y will pick our second, then I'll pick. And then every fourth movie, we will spin the Wheel of Death, which is our randomized movie pick, where we just pick a random Netflix horror movie, which is always a wild time. But for now, Allison with a Y, what are we watching next time?
Next, we will be watching The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us anything about that?
There's a corpse.
Okay.
Good. Which I like a good corpse-centric film.
Yeah.
I actually watched this one several years ago with Steven, my old co-host. And I think it might have even been before this podcast started.
Yeah, that's a rewatch for me as well.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice. I'm the only one who hadn't watched it before.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have an interesting discussion about that next time. So join us for that. And just a quick reminder again to follow us on our social media platforms at Amoncast, EHMONcast. And where can you find us, Allison with a Y?
Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky.
Libutopia.
Libutopia, Blue Sky. And then at...
And YouTube.
And YouTube. Oh, yeah. We're starting a YouTube channel. We'll figure it out. We'll let you know details later on. And then on TikTok, for as long as TikTok is here, at Amon Podcast.
And that's EHMON, every horror movie on Netflix. And I think that wraps us up. So we will see you in 1 week for a discussion of The Autopsy of Jane Doe. Until then, for every horror movie on Netflix, I'm Patrick.
Allison with an I.
And I'm Allison with a Y.
See you next time.